Welcome to another episode of First Off, Let's Kill All the Lawyers. I am extraordinarily excited this morning with the guests that I have on. And, you know, we opened the show with Let's Kill All the Lawyers because it's a 15th century phrase from Shakespeare that often gets misquoted. But the problem is a lot of people still today quote it and think, man, it's not a bad idea. You know, we could wipe these guys out. But I can tell you this. This is a lawyer that guarantee is not on anybody's kill list. My only concern this morning with my guest is that I've only got about 30 minutes. And if I read all of the accolades about this man and my friend, it may take more than 30 minutes. But my guest this morning, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about him, and let's bring him in, is Stan Blake, who was a circuit court judge here in Miami for 22 years, was in private practice in Miami, was a public defender in Miami. But I have to touch on something, Stan, before we start, because I do have to give you some props.
Go ahead, David.
The honors. This man, when he served for 22 years, the Judge William Hoover Lifetime Achievement Award by the Dade County Bar, Outstanding Jurist Award, American Academy of Matrimonial Lawyers, the Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Award for Judicial Excellence, the Florida Conference of Circuit Judges Chair Award, Justice Gerald Kogan Judicial Distinction Award, Judge Alan Schwartz Judicial Excellence Award, Judge Steve Levine Award for Fairness, Integrity, and Professionalism. The list goes on and on and on, including, which I don't think I've ever seen, he had a rating of 99% of exceptional or qualified by the Florida Bar or by the Dade County Bar in a rating. I mean, and Stan, I can tell you, I've never had a grade of a 99%.
No, if you had the 3 of yours together, you did.
Well, that's true. Stan, how are you?
I'm doing great, David. How are you doing?
I am wonderful. I'm not as wonderful as you because I'm here in beautiful South Florida, but it's summertime and it's sticky and it's hot. And I know you're in Beach Mountain, North Carolina, doing a little bit of work, but getting a lot of golf in.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice. Zoom has been a terrific thing. I mean, you know, with my mediation practice after I left the bench, normally we would meet in person. But now with Zoom, we have people. I had someone the other day was in Madrid and someone was in Argentina on the same mediation. So no one's flying around and it's great.
Well, now you've got it internationally. We're going to get to mediation because I want to talk about it. But let's go back a little bit with you. What drew you into the practice of law? And I know you started at the public defender's office, but what was the appeal and how'd you wind up getting into law?
Well, it's funny. I started off at I went to Miami Law School, and I'm a Cane fan too. But I went to the University of Florida.
I know. And, we'll for that.
I started off in pre-dentistry, and after my third chemistry course, they said, this is not going to work. So actually, I went through the College of Journalism, majored in advertising, minored in political science, and took a lot of law-related courses. And while I had offers to go to New York and in the advertising industry, I didn't want the insecurity of that profession, where you're on top of the world, you lose some big account, you're taking your portfolio, and you're looking for a new job. So I said, you know, I loved everything with law. I went to law school, loved it from the beginning. And then I took a course as a law student to work with the public defender's office, it's just such a rush. You being a trial attorney, you know what it is.
Sure.
And then when you could see how you could help people and the difference you could really make in the world and in people's lives, that gave me an opportunity to do something that most professions don't allow you to do.
That's fantastic. But I got to diverge a little bit because there was also a family business that I want to know how you couldn't have got into that, because it was my favorite stomping ground forever. But I know your family had ties to Tobacco Road.
Right. My father owned it. It was called the Chanticleer at the time. He owned it from 1950, a year after it came down from Detroit. Sold it in 1975. Now, it was a blue-collar neighborhood. However, it was the only 5 o'clock liquor license in Miami. So when they built the four ambassadors, if you went in there at 3 a.m., you would have the pressman from the Miami Herald who'd walked across the river to get a shot and a beer. You'd have people with tuxedos and ball gowns on looking for a martini. So it was a real eclectic place. Now, when he sold it, I was probably making as a public defender $15,000-$16,000 a year. They sold it, from what I understand, 5 years ago for like $11 million. If I had known it was going to be that valuable, I probably wouldn't be here right now with you, David, but I have no regrets.
Well, I don't know. You'd still be here because I would have known you because I'd have been hanging out at Tobacco Road.
That's so true. You know,
it's funny because they've actually opened a place right down the street, a tribute to Tobacco Road by Kush. And my son was telling me, actually, they've done a nice job of sort of honoring the history of what Tobacco Road was like and trying to keep it as that type of establishment. So
yeah, that's what I heard. I hadn't had a chance to be there. It's the old River Oyster right in the corner.
Yes.
South
yes.
Miami Avenue and 7th.
Yep, right on the corner. So you work as a public defender for 5 or 6 years. You go into private practice, and I'm assuming your private practice was criminal defense work?
Mostly was. I mean, you know, I had other things from time to time, but actually I bought a person who had been a judge, who was appointed as a judge, Moe Tendrich, who you may have remembered.
Sure.
I bought his practice along with Jeff Rosnick, who had been my teacher at Gables High. And he was a civil practice. So I tried some civil cases right off the bat. And then I said, listen, my criminal practice took off. Jeff, you do the civil stuff. I'll do the criminal. But I would get into the both arenas.
Excellent. Excellent. We transitioned from private practice to the bench where you have a long 22-year stint.
Right.
How is it? Did you run for election? Were you appointed? How'd you wind up getting on the bench?
You know, when you sit there in court, and David being an active trial attorney, you sit there and you watch, as you're waiting for your case to be called, you watch some judges, some who treat people with respect and some who think they're anointed and come down from Mount Sinai. So I knew one day I wanted to do it. But then we had something in the early 90s called courtroom in Miami, where there were some judges who were taking bribes and giving bonds and granting motions for money. And when that broke, having gone to college in the 60s, we were idealists. So I sat down with my wife and kids. I said, you know, I think I'm going to move up my timetable. I knew I wanted to go on the bench one day. I had one child who was getting ready to start college, two who hadn't. I said, be good news and bad news. Good news, if I get on the bench, we'll have more official vacation time. Bad news, we can never afford to go anywhere again. I did not know how prophetic that was going to be or how pathetic the salary was in practice. But I back then, if you were up for an appointment and you were appointed, you had to run the next time. I was up for an appointment. I knew it was between myself and another. That person was already a county court judge. And so there was a new seat created. So I filed for that only in May before it was, not like they do now for 2 or 3 years. And I got a call from the governor's general counsel that the other person got the appointment. I'd get the next one. They knew I was running. If I didn't get it, I'd get appointed. Well, fortunately, I won with like 69% of the vote and then never had opposition after that.
And I know that because it was a sort of an untethered run, because who in their right mind would run against you, because you were truly, and we read the accolades, but you were respected from every aspect of it. I mean, from the judges you worked with to the lawyers that were before you to haven't even read stories of, you know, people you were sentencing that were still respectful and grateful to you for being fair and impartial, even though they were going to jail.
Yeah, that probably was as good as it gets. I mean, one of the quick stories like that, there's a gentleman who was in his early 40s. He had been convicted of, I don't remember what, there was minimum mandatories. And the guidelines called me to sentence him to like, I think 25, 30 years, whatever it was. And it was, you know, something I had to do. So he said at the end, he says, well, thank you, Judge. I said, well, Mr. So-and-so, I just sentenced you what I had to do. And with your age, you're probably not going to get out of jail until you're close to 80 years of age. He says, no, I'm not thanking you for that. He says, you know, from my record, I've been around a lot. And he says, in trial every day, when I came in from the court, from jail, you asked how my night was. You treated me the same as you treated the lawyers, the jurors. the first time I've ever been respected in a courtroom. So I'm thanking you for respecting me. I hope I get your ass reversed on appeal. So we all laughed, and he didn't get my ass reversed on appeal. But, you know, that's how we should live as people. I mean, it really isn't real hard. I didn't have to go to law school to be respectful and be nice.
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit about, because I think one of the things that people don't understand, and I know it because, and Stan, you've taught at UM for a long time as I have, but I know it from students because they don't quite understand. I mean, you hear about a circuit court judge and people automatically think, okay, well, a civil judge or a criminal judge, but there's several divisions that circuit court judges can sit in. And I know you've been around to pretty much all of them at some point. How is that determined where judges get assigned, whether they're in family law, whether they're in criminal, or whether they're in civil?
Well, when you first get elected or appointed to the bench, it depends where there's an opening. And usually, especially used to be more in the past, but still, the civil is considered a better division to sit in, or perhaps probate. So criminal was and juvenile were often the bottom feeders. For me, going to criminal in the beginning was so comfortable because I felt like I've been there my whole life, which I had been from the practice of law. And then after that, it depends on seniority. So every 3 years there's a rotation and you can put in for a different seat. Now, if you've been in a certain division and someone has never been there, they might be able to balance you depending on your seniority. So there's the good news and the bad news. Good news is you have judges who you may not want to have, and they get rotated out and you're thrilled. But the bad news is sometimes you have a judge who really understands your case or is very good on a particular area of law, and a newbie comes in who's never sat in there, never experienced that, and you're trying to educate them. But I think for the most part, it makes for more well-rounded, I know for me as a judge, but there's pros and cons, but that's how it works.
Well, and I can tell you, that news circulates like wildfire among trial lawyers when, first off, there's all the rumors who's rotating in and out. And then when it officially happens, it goes from every lawyer because, like you're saying, some of it, oh, great, we got rid of that judge. Maybe I got a shot now to, oh, no, I'm in trouble now because we couldn't finish it in front of that judge.
Yeah, and if it's a judge you don't like, you know the rotation's coming up, you find excuses for continuances, right, or other motions to drag the case on a little longer.
So I know you've got a sort of soft spot in your heart for criminal work, but in those rotations, did you have a preference of where you preferred presiding, whether that was, you know, in civil or criminal or even family? Although I got to imagine family's got to be rough.
You know, it's funny. I love the one. I mean, criminal's the most exciting. I mean, you know, the morning calendar could be a 2-drink minimum in a nightclub. I mean, the stuff you would see was amazing. And, you know, some of my old cases that were on Dateline, they still play at 2 or 3 in the morning. And people say, oh, I saw you on TV. Well, I had a mustache and hair was darker and probably more of it. But criminal was just exciting. But family, you know, I've been married, divorced with 3 kids. So I got it. I got the emotions. I understand the importance of parents co-parenting and what the kids are going through. So you really felt like you did something in that regard. And of course, in family court, there's no jury. So you make all the decisions. Civil court, I love because of the diversity of the issues you would have. And any morning on a motion counter, you go from a foreclosure to a contract dispute to a personal injury to a medical malpractice to whatever. And actually, it was a challenge for all the areas you had to really be knowledgeable on or make yourself knowledgeable on. And I love the challenge of being prepared. I loved when I would read over the 30 motions for the 5-minute motion counter. Some colleagues might say, well, half of them don't show up. I say, well, yeah, but for the ones who do, I want to be able to do their case in 5 minutes. Or it's funny, when I first got to the civil bench, I mean, well, I knew the lawyers, they hadn't been in front of me in family or criminal. And they would have what's called special sets where there's lots of issues. And you set aside a 2 or 3 hour block and they give you big fat binders. And I'd make a ruling for the first 6 months, even if I ruled against the person, they said, thank you. I go, what do you think, man? I ruled against you. Thank you for being prepared. thank you for having read what I gave you. So they were all had their special things. The toughest part of family is sometimes the emotional part where you're trying to get through the emotions and get to the intellect. And the toughest part of civil is when the attorneys weren't prepared.
Right. Yeah, it cuts both ways. The system works much better when lawyers are prepared, judges are prepared, and it really does make a big difference when you come in and you know that judge is not looking at the motion for the first time that morning, having just woken up and you had gone through it. So you get some more pointed questions to say, okay, I kind of get this. Let's talk about this aspect of it, though, which really, really does make it more enjoyable for the lawyers, even if you do get ruled against.
Right. At least, your point has been heard, been considered, and, listen, there's 50% winners and losers every day in what you're ruling, but you do the best you can with what you got.
So we have a mutual friend, and I was corresponding back and forth because I told him you were coming on, and I was asked to ask you about a court reporter who took down the phrase objection irrelevant, but took it down as meaning something else.
Yes. Well, when I was the administrative judge of criminal division, they wanted to put electronic court reporting in to save money and whatever. Well, being around the system forever, I like to have a court reporter there typing. If you have a sidebar, you're kind of just joking and they know when to pick the fingers up off their keys and things like that. Well, there was a transcript I saw that had been, and when these electronic things, when they were trying them, then they would send them to wherever to have transcribed. I don't know if it's the United States or Pakistan or wherever. But one of the transcripts I read, what had been said was objection irrelevant. It was transcribed erection an elephant. So it was that close. That was one of the things which I think helped keep most of the court reporters around and keep the electronics out of the courtroom, especially with jury selection. The court reporter can see on a panel who's talking. The electronics is very, very difficult.
Yeah. Which I imagine, as we've worked through the pandemic, court reporters have had issues because I know lawyers have of saying, well, they don't want a witness to have a mask on because, again, you have to be able to read the face. You have to be able to look at them. A jury's got to be able to assess them. So you start doing these things behind masks. Pretty good argument to say that it's not really being fair at that point.
I think it's a very fine argument. I mean, reading and body language and, is important. See how, not what you hear, but how it's said, and see what they're doing is important. So I think at least the court system is trying to open up. Of course, our courthouse in Miami is, for the civil courthouse, is disgraceful. I mean, it was built in 1925, I guess. We're building a new one now. I guess it'll be done another 2 to 3 years. But so some of the newer courthouses, like in Palm Beach or Broward, they can have more courtrooms that will be where people will feel safe to go in there with the jurors. Miami-Dade, not as much, but, that's one reasons we probably been mediating a lot of settlements because people know it's going to be a long time until the system's up and running again.
Yeah, we've talked about it. And I give a lot of credit to the Dade County Judiciary because I think they've done a really good job of staying on top of this, being able to move cases the best they can under the circumstances through the pandemic and really adhering to guidelines to get it reopened. So, I just think the judges have done a really, really nice job. And you're right. I think lawyers now look at it and say, we're a couple years out. I mean, they're trying to push that backlog, but it's a long way getting down. And I've been pleasantly surprised that through the pandemic, we've had, as plaintiff's lawyers, my fear was, hey, they're not going to pay you anything because they'll just sit on it and they'll sit on their money for a couple of years because there's no hammer out there. There's no jury system out there. But we've had a lot of success with mediation, and now you've made the transition from a guy that kind of makes the rulings and controls everything to the mediator who now is really a facilitator. I mean, you influence decisions, certainly, but talk about that and how you've been able to do, and I could say it firsthand because I've had the pleasure of mediating cases with you, how you've been so successful in transitioning into mediation.
Well, you know, however, listen, I was fortunate. My mom lived to 102 and was sharp until the end. So somehow I got her wiring. I got my father's gift for gab, but my mother's wiring for other things. And, you know, when I went from being an advocate as a lawyer, and it's funny, I was elected in September of 1994, taking the bench in January of 95, but I had my own cases to work out. So I'd be sitting in court watching the judge make rulings thinking, what would I do? But I realized I'm no longer the advocate. I'm now, at the time, the impartial judge, but I have to make the rulings. Then I realized as a mediator, I don't rule anymore. Now, one of the reasons maybe I'm so busy is because some of former judges still think they're making the rulings, and they come in, they say, this is where it should end, but it's a process, mediation. It might be like sausage. If you knew how it's made, you don't want to eat it.
Right.
But we might reach a settlement. It went through a crazy thing, but it works out. But I think that the way I made the transition is I realized I now have a different position in the system. But I can still bring, I've been a lawyer now, I'll be 48 years this year. I know I started like 12 years old when I was Doogie Howser, as any viewers can see.
Yeah, I was doing the math between the time on the bench. You must be 107, but I'm not going to call you out.
No, I'm 60. I was 12 when I went to law school. I told you that, Dave.
Okay.
So in any event, but I realized the difference that there would be as a mediator. But I give... You know, there's certain rules of mediation. You don't come in and tell them what to do. It's up to that person. And it's not up to the attorneys. The attorneys, you know, give the advice. But I will give, they will ask, and sometimes the attorneys will ask what I've seen on the bench or how these cases played out in front of a jury. And, you know, you can do certain things. And I'm not just a potted plant. Here's a number. I mean, you know, you don't need to hire a former judge or anyone to do that. A non-lawyer can be a mediator. But, you know, I think they're hiring me because I've seen things and they know that I like to connect with people. And even on Zoom, I can still do that pretty well. And, you know, so whether it be an adjuster in a PI case or the plaintiff, I seem to have a good amount of success in getting things settled. But I'm not the one. I might say to myself, I know how this is going to turn out, but I'm not there. And sometimes you plant the seeds. And it might be a month later that the attorneys and the clients finally reach the settlement that you talked about.
Well, and I've watched you work that, and it really is an art form, because you're not telling them what to do, but ultimately you're making them think that they decided what to do, but it was kind of how what you told them to do.
So I think it helps. Yeah.
It helps. So let's talk about just for the general public, because we throw out mediation, okay, but. What is the process of mediation? What claims get mediated? I mean, just kind of explain that whole thing.
Well, mediation is the process of trying to have two sides come to a mutual agreement. And when I tell them when one side thinks they're paying too much money and one side thinks they're not getting enough, we have a good settlement. But because what you have is certainty. And one thing we know, especially after COVID and things are coming up, we don't have a lot of certainty going on.
Right.
You know, it's funny what you said about you wondered if, as a plaintiff's attorney, if you would be able to have insurance companies fork up any money. What I found when COVID hit and we started doing Zoom, in the very beginning, I thought the insurance companies were playing it very close to the vest, thinking they could wait out everything. And then I think they realized that the backlog of cases, and for the defense firms who are representing them, was going to be untenable.
Right.
So they had to start loosening the purse strings. And then I have found, for the most part, probably the same flow of money now as in the past.
Right.
I think now Zoom has become the norm, so the old norm has kind of come up. In the beginning, I agree with you, and there was a big concern about that. But mediation is a practice of trying to get people to do. And the way it works out is that I start with my little spiel, what it is. And I like to personally go around the room online and find out where everyone's from and a little bit about. So it makes it less adversarial. And then the attorneys will give an opening statement for the plaintiff and then for the defense. We have the ability on Zoom to have what's called a screen share, where you can put exhibits up there and do a PowerPoint. And then I'm able to, with the click of a mouse, put people in what's called breakout rooms. We used to call them a caucus. We would all meet in a lawyer's office and all be in a conference room. And then we'd break into separate rooms in the lawyer's office. And I would go from room to room. Now I'm able to create breakout rooms where I'll put the attorneys and the party for the plaintiff on one side and the defense and the attorneys there in another room. And I can, with the click of the mouse, go from room to room. And what we talk about is confidential. They don't hear. And it's worked out pretty well. It's funny. I used to say in some offices where I had to go to a different floor for a separate room or cross a big office, on my phone, you have how many steps you're doing in a day. Right. And I then after say, wow, look at this. I did 3,000 steps today or whatever. Now the only thing I get is carpal tunnel. So it's
okay, carpal tunnel. You could get your steps in on the golf course, though. You've got
That's true.
But, so what type of claims do you mediate? I mean, does it go beyond just civil disputes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I pretty much can mediate everything. Actually, it's funny. They wanted me on a pilot program about 4 or 5 months ago, mediate criminal cases. So the state attorney and the public defender agreed to 4 cases that I could mediate. They were relatively serious cases, but cases they thought could be resolved. And then I would go back and forth and kind of knowing from my background in criminal, where would be a proper sentence that would get the state to say, yes, we can come below guidelines. And the defense attorney would say, yes, my client can accept that. But for the most part, I do civil and family and probate. I mean, so civil can be anything from, for instance, later this morning, we still are mediating insurance claims from Hurricane Irma, which was September 10th, 2017, called where someone says they have damage to their house and the insurance company says it's not covered, to medical malpractice, where some doctors alleged to have created some problem, to personal injury, which is very common, auto accidents, slip and falls, things of that nature. Yes, they had one where someone was in an elevator and the panel, but not just a little plastic thing, a heavy panel fell on their head. And then the problems that's created from that. You have breach of contract cases. People have a business relationship and then someone does something different or a non-compete that's been violated. So the whole gamut of everything. And then I do family ones also. I do many more civil because there's so many more civil cases. But family ones can be anything from the beginning. You know, as a former judge, you kind of figure out how we can settle everything from child right. support to time sharing to dividing up property to whatever. And other times it's called post-disillusion. They've been divorced. I had one, they've been divorced for 21 years. And now the kids are growing, thank God. But they're still fighting over a certain property. And you know, enough folks. I mean, this isn't a sport. You know, right. Unless you like having an annuity for your attorneys.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So does a case have to be in litigation to be mediated?
No. I do a fair amount of what's called pre-suit mediations, which means there's going to be a case that could come down the pike. Someone could be filing. But before the time, the effort, the energy, and the money especially is spent, they want to see if it can be resolved. And I do a fair amount of those. And it may be in a restaurant where there's a slip and fall. It may be I've done some which were serious allegations of some negligence on the part of a doctor. And even there's certain notifications you have to give them like that. But we've had a fair amount of success with that, where when you get down to it, how expensive it can be, then people realize maybe it's smart to settle now.
Excellent. Well, listen, I've had the pleasure of mediating cases with you. I'm sure there'll be many more to come. I could spend a lot of time talking with you, Stan, because one, you've got fascinating background and you're just, I think, a tremendous human being as well.
Well, thank you. The check will be sent to you very soon.
Exactly. That's the way you wrote it up, right?
Yeah, I did. I wasn't supposed to say it on the air. Maybe the editor can cut this out. That wouldn't be right. I wouldn't want to say that.
Exactly. Well, clearly a lawyer we can take off anybody's kill list is Stan Blake. And if you need any mediation services, Stan for Blake Mediation, okay? You can look him up. He does do a tremendous job. And I'm going to tell you, Stan, in all honesty, a lot of ex-judges that have become mediators, I don't think have become very good mediators because they still think they're wearing the ropes. And I'll leave names out, but it really has been a tough transition. I think you've done a great job.
Well, thank you. I'll tell you a funny story about that. There used to be a judge who was across the hall from me in one of the courthouses. And he would come in the morning and tell me how, or in the afternoon, how he ruled to someone or how he treated someone. And I would say, you're such a whatever.
Right.
Fill in the blanks. So now he's out there mediating. He's been doing it for a while. He says, I have maybe one mediation, maybe two a month, and you're booked up every day for 3 or 4 months. I said, remember when I used to tell you you were not believing? I said, if you treat people like that, now you say to them, I want you to pay me $400 or $500 an hour. Oh, yeah, you treat me like that? So I do thank all those former colleagues for that. And right. It was funny. When I went out, people say, well, we have to see. You know, we know how he was on the bench, but we have to see how he is a mediator. And fortunately, I've kind of fooled them and figured it out. So, David, I thank you. This show is terrific. And I love, you know, Let's Kill All the Lawyers, and which was really meant the opposite. If you want to get rid of society, that's what you do. But I love the name of your show. And where is this showing anyway?
I will send you a link so that you have it and you can, you know, you can show your friends, both of them.
The other one is no longer.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. The list has been shortened. But I'll send you a link, and we've got it on Apple and Spotify, and Community Newspapers has run it. And so we're getting it out there. But anybody that needs mediation services, Stanford Blake Mediation is there. Been a pleasure, Stan.
David, love seeing you. And, you know, we've talked together and we've done things together. And I always loved watching you. You're obviously much, much, much younger than I am. But I loved watching you on the football field and cheering for you. I didn't know we'd be friends ultimately.
Well, it's nice. It's nice to know. And I look forward to seeing you sometime soon. Go mediate. Go enjoy some golf in your 58-degree weather up there. I'm going to go outside and sweat for a while.
Yeah, well, you might want to wear, if you're outside, a lighter shirt. Okay.
There you go.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye. All right.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
It was awesome. Thank you. And that wraps another one. We can take somebody off the kill list, and we'll talk to you soon.